Good morning. I'd like to call to order the State and Local Government Finance Policy Committee for Thursday, April 18th. Welcome to Omnibus. Chair Cleaborn? Oh, wait, we got to approve the minutes from last meeting. Who's had a chance?
I move the approval of the meeting from yesterday.
Thank you, Lead Nash. Lead Nash approves the minutes from April 16th. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are approved. All right, now to Chair Cleaborn's bill. Chair?
Thank you. I just want to make sure that we have the motion before us. We are moving House File 3431, the DE4, House File 3431 as amended to the General Register. That will be the motion before us today. To Ways and Means. We have to make the stop at Ways and Means first.
The chair moves that House File 3431, as amended, be moved to Ways and Means.
To Ways and Means, yes.
Okay. So, Chair Cleaborn, to your bill.
Thank you. We have a list of amendments that we need to go through today, beginning with the author's amendment, the A-22.
Chair, to your A-22.
Okay, the A-22 does many things, and I think the easiest, I don't know, Mr. Gehring, would you like to walk through the A-22 just as a very clinical step?
Mr. Chair and committee members, sure, so I'll just walk through really briefly the A-22. The instruction on page 7, line 11, is specifying that the appropriation that's provided for healthy food alternatives on the state capital complex is a one-time transfer. Lines 1.4 through 1.4 through 1.7 are changes related to the Huber H. Humphrey statute appropriation. 1.8 is a technical correction of a typo on the appropriation related to the Department of Administration. Line 1.9 inserts the Minnesota Board on Aging to the section that requires tribal consultation. Line 1.10 relates to the Office of Administrative Hearings data practices standards for court proceedings. 1.11 changes the statutory coding for the capital improvement accounts. Lines 1.12 to 1.14, I might defer to Ms. Griffin.
Mr. Chair and members, lines 1.12 to 1.14 provides clarifying information for the capital project replacement accounts. Specifying that in addition to a state agencies and state officials being excluded from that requirement, the Board of Regents and Board of Trustees are also excluded.
And then, Mr. Chair, starting on line 1.15 through the end of the amendment is a series of amendments to the section that relates to the reporting of cybersecurity incidents. That's Representative Bonner's bill.
Thank you, staff. Chair Cleaborn, anything to add?
Yes, I would like for Representative Bonner, if she would be willing to do so, to just talk about why there are so many changes in the A-20, just briefly, why there are so many changes in the A-22 regarding the cybersecurity.
Representative Bonner, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will say, first of all, one word, the Senate. I guess that's two. But frankly, a lot of the pieces in that amendment actually sort of move the furniture around, if you will, in the amendment. There are a few minor pieces that actually clarify language, but the vast majority of it actually just moves things around.
Thank you. And since Lee Nash worked on this legislation, I would just ask him if he had any concerns about that.
Lee Nash?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Chair, no.
Thank you very much. So the other thing is there was a... I did receive another email after the fact that in addition to the typographical change that was described, I believe that on line 3421 of the bill, there's an and that should be changed to an or. Is that correct? Was that in line 22? I'm sorry if I missed that.
Staff?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bieber, yes. So the change that you'd be incorporating into the DE4 is page 34, line 21. Delete the word and insert or.
Right. I just want to make sure that that's all on the record.
And then
Madam Chair, is there anything else? Any other discussion from members? Oh, sorry. Looks like there's line 3.5.
Mm-hmm. Also on line 3.5 of the A22 amendment, after the word court, it should say court order. And I would ask that the members would agree to those two changes in the A22. It's line 3.5 of the A22.
Thank you, Chair Cleburne. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of adding the A22?
Excuse me, wait a minute. Oops, do we need to have an oral amendment for that, or is that would be a correction with the revisor's office? Okay, I just want to make sure. Thank you.
Okay, one more time.
Yes, thank you.
So, all those in favor of adding the A22, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right, to the A23, Chair Cleburne.
Thank you very much. And Chair Hansen will bring this one forward, please.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the A23 amendment. The A23 amendment is a skinny version of House File 4028, which was heard in the Environment Committee. It relates to the adoption or amendments of comprehensive plans. The difference between this and the bill that was heard in our committee and referred to this committee is we don't have the legislative findings that were originally in House File 4028. It is just the part relating to the adoption of amendment or amendment of a comprehensive plan, and it's fairly clear there. Simple amendment, and ask for your support.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Are there any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? The amendment's added. A25, who has that?
That is my amendment.
Chair, to your amendment.
Thank you. It has to do with the state capital management of space, and the amendment is to bring forward a conversation about the space between the two caucus rooms in the Capitol. As I have spoken with admin this morning, there have been some incidences where members going to the caucus rooms to do the legislative work and discussion about the legislation before us on the floor have had some security issues, and this is to address those security issues and to talk about how we can best make sure that the Capitol is both open and accessible, but also that members are able to move freely to do the work of the people of Minnesota.
Discussion to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Well, Madam Chair, you and I spoke about this last night on the phone. I understand your argument, but having been here for 10 years now and having used that caucus room for a while, I don't know that roping off with a velvet rope, which is what I believe you described to me last night.
Not a velvet rope.
Okay. Well, we'll go budgetary rope, like nylon rope. I don't know that sends the proper message of accessibility to the public for to their legislators. I have been stopped. I have had people that were both there to encourage my caucus and discourage my caucus, and I'm not afraid of the public, and I don't know that sends the proper message for us to have somebody out there with a whatever rope you're barring that off. In addition to that, Madam Chair, and you and I spoke about this last night, the admin has put different art exhibits there that are accessible to the public, and I think that creates a contradiction and some problems for admin down the road. If you're going to put art there, then there's a presumption that the public should be able to access that, and if you rope it off so that the last 12 feet that we have between the entryway and our caucus rooms that we aren't spoken to by the public, that creates problems for me. I would encourage members to vote no and would request a roll call.
Mm-hmm. Hearing a roll call, a roll call will be granted. Chair?
Thank you. And Lee Nash, I really do appreciate the conversations that you and I have regarding these amendments. And there is ample space in the Capitol building, as we discussed last night, you know, we have large corridors throughout the Capitol building itself where art can be displayed. And we are only talking about doing this during the legislative session when legislators need that space. So it doesn't have to be an everyday, all-day kind of thing, but we do need to make sure that when legislators are moving. And I'm very thankful that you have not experienced some of the harassment that other members have experienced, but harassment and true safety issues are something that we must consider in these times of difficulty in our democratic process. But you and I both agree that transparency and openness and accessibility are something that we both agree on. And with that, I would ask members for a yes vote.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Cleburne?
Aye.
Chair Cleburne, aye. Vice Chair Hewitt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hewitt, aye. Lee Nash?
Nope.
Lee Nash, no. Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Bonner, aye. Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Berg, aye. Representative Freiberg, excused. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Representative Hansen, aye. Representative Harder?
No.
Representative Harder, no. Representative Herr?
Aye.
Representative Herr, aye. Representative Joy?
No.
Representative Joy, no. Representative Kosnick?
No.
Representative Kosnick, no. Representative Nadeau?
No.
Representative Nadeau, no. Representative Newton, excused. Ayes are 6, nays are 5 with 2 excused.
Ayes are 6, nays are 5 with 2 excused. The ayes have it. The amendment is accepted. To the A3, Representative Kosnick, I believe.
I'm taking that one, Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir. Representative Lee Nash.
Thank A3. You, Mr. Chair and members. This would simply remove Section 5, lines 7.5 through 7.11 from the bill. And, you know, math matters. I wanted to run through this math. So there is proposed to be a $500,000 one-time appropriation to provide a healthy and sustainable food options account in order to provide for healthy eating during the time that we are in session. So that's $500,000, and we are in, over the course of a biennium, in session for 9 months. So I did math. So $500,000 divided by 9 months is $55,555.55 per month. And then there's 201 legislators that we'd like to eat healthfully. So we divide that out. That's $276 subsidy to make sure that my lunch consists of maybe like some grilled tofu and some wheat germ, some spinach greens or things like that. On top of that, Madam Chair, we have a per diem that members are provided, and it's $66 a day here in the House and $86 a day in the Senate because apparently they're eating for two over there in the Senate. Thank you, Representative Joy. I think there is already, according to Madam Chair last night on the phone, there is already a subsidy in place for the two restaurants or cafeterias that are both at the Capitol and in the DOT. So we have an existing subsidy for them. We're going to provide another $500,000 for them to net out a $276 subsidy over 9 months for legislators who are already getting a per diem. Many people bring their lunch from home, others do DoorDash, others do stuff at the DOT. And, you know, I was struck by this because at the college that I am a trustee at, we had or have a food vendor that when we wanted to have a change of the menu, we sat down with them and said, hey, vendor, because you like doing business with us, we would like you to offer a different menu. Keep many of the same things that were there, but also bring in healthier options. And because they enjoyed doing business with us, they said, sure, we can do that. So market forces came to bear because students wanted some healthier options, and we didn't have to subsidize $500,000 or $55,555 per month, $276 per legislator. So I think that the intent is very nice. We always want people to to eat well. And, you know, as a parent of six, we always try to remind them to eat healthy things. But we don't need to subsidize cafeterias for $500,000. The LANYAP, and I hope everybody knows that word. It's a great word.
I don't know that word.
It means not only just a little bit extra, but extra, extra. Hmm. We had an $18 billion surplus last year that we blew through, $10 billion in new taxes. And now, in the second year of the biennium, we're like, hey, let's spend $500,000 so that politicians can have a healthy lunch. So I would be very interested in the conversation around this.
Mm-hmm. Eric Cleborn.
Thank you very much. And, you know, I like math, too, and I like statistics, and I like how people use statistics, and I like how people use statistics to make arguments, which is awesome. But with all mathematical equations, it depends upon what you put in the modeling. And to think that only legislators use the cafeterias in both the Capitol and in the Department of Transportation is to deny reality. Most legislators don't have time for lunch. So it's very interesting, that modeling argument. What I would just say is that this amount of money will help us determine what is the best vendor to bring into the complex. Is it necessary for admin to have the flexibility to negotiate a two-year contract, a four-year contract, to investigate what it means to have healthy eating at the Capitol, what it means to have culturally appropriate food in the Capitol, what does it mean to meet the dietary needs of Minnesotans who come to the Capitol to do democracy? All of those things are really important, and we need to be able to give admin the tools and the financing to do the investigation and to provide the vendors that are appropriate to meet the needs of Minnesotans who come to the Capitol to exercise democracy. And with that, I would ask members to vote yes.
Representative Joy.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair Cleborn. I think, moving forward to have people eat healthy, this would have been a great insert into the lunch bill for the kids in school so they get local produce and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. This would have been somewhere we should have went with something like this. Thank you.
Back to Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair.
I believe Lee Nash already spoke, but all right. And,
well, but Madam Chair, I didn't have my opportunity.
But we want to move on because we have two other.
Madam Chair, I didn't have my opportunity to ask for a roll call.
Thank you.
And I would remind the Chair that last night when we spoke, there was no mention of culturally appropriate food. There was no mention of that. It was healthy eating for legislators during the time that we are in session. And I would tell my colleagues on both sides of the aisle, it does not cost $500,000 to effectively administer an RFP. The Chair just told us that they wanted to find the proper vendor and that we're going to create $500,000 one-time appropriation to feed politicians and, I guess, bureaucrats. So I don't see the need. We have existing restaurants, cafeterias in these. You could simply sit down across the table and say, we'd like healthier options. So I will ask for a roll call.
Madam Chair, can we go to the vote?
Please just go to the vote. The arguments have been made, and you can decide how you want to do it, but I ask for a yes vote from our side. Thank you.
Mr. Westerholm, would you please take the roll?
She asked for a yes vote.
Oh, excuse me. Okay.
I appreciate that, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
I feel love. I feel the love.
All right. We're going to take a recess for just a minute, please. I just need to verify something.
Yep. The committee will be in recess to college.
Thank you very much. And I need to clarify my vote. I just want to make sure that...
Hold on. We have to put ourselves back in.
Thank you. You're back on me.
We're reconvening.
Lee Nash, you almost caught me out. Yes, this is a no vote.
That makes
I do want to vote yes for healthy food. I want to vote no on your amendment. Thank you.
Aww.
Okay, hearing that said, can we please take the roll on the A3 amendment?
Chair Cleaverne.
No.
Chair Cleaverne, no. Vice Chair Hewitt.
No.
Vice Chair Hewitt, no. Lee Nash.
Yes, please.
Lee Nash, aye. Representative Bonner.
No.
Representative Bonner, no. Representative Berg.
No.
Representative Berg, no. Representative Freiberg, excused. Representative Hansen.
No.
Representative Hansen, no. Representative Harder.
Aye.
Representative Harder, aye. Representative Herr.
No.
Representative Herr, no. Representative Joy.
Yes, please.
Representative Joy, aye. Representative Kosnick.
Aye.
Representative Kosnick, aye. Representative Nadeau.
Yes.
Representative Nadeau, aye. Representative Newton, excused. The ayes are 5, nays are 6, with 2 excused.
With the nays 6, the ayes 5, and 2 excused, the amendment does not prevail. To the A4, Representative Nash, that's yours, I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hmm. Well, since we've been talking about healthy eating, I thought maybe we would go a different direction. We'll take the $500,000 appropriated, and rather than have it go to an unnecessary RFP to find vendors that we could just negotiate with to provide, I thought maybe, and there will be a graphic that we release a little bit later, maybe we find some space on our rather capacious front lawn, and we make a garden where we can plant things like kale and turnips or rutabagas or Brussels sprouts. That was a good idea, Representative Kosnick. So let's do something meaningful, and this would force us to maybe walk outside, and during a legislative break, we can go and weed and tend to the garden, and then we would provide those vegetables to both staff and members and folks who work in the buildings that are scattered across the campus. So if we'd like healthy eating, let's vote for Brussels sprouts.
Chair.
I love Brussels sprouts, and I think this would be a great bill for next year, and I encourage Lee Nash to bring a full bill for full vetting. Members, please vote no.
Any other discussion? Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Chair, just when this Section 5, if it's implemented and analyzing, establish the $500,000 account, is it possible when you're talking about healthy food, are they going to kick out the food trucks that visit the Capitol complex and provide a service to its visitors?
Chair,
or will they have to be healthy?
I would have said only on the first one, but Chair, do you want to answer?
I don't have any. There would be no reason to kick out the food trucks. There's no reason to do that. Thank you.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, and the reason I ask, it seems kind of, it is a serious question because we've never had a bill hearing on this, and so it's just kind of showing up. But when we're talking about healthy food options and such, as much as everybody enjoys a good, delicious sampling from a food truck, it may not always, it could, mm-hmm. but some may not qualify as your healthiest food option. Very delicious, but I just want to make sure that those vendors out there that work hard, and many of them are young entrepreneurs, new businesses trying to start up and get started, want to make sure that we don't kill that economic activity of the food truck business at the Capitol with your $500,000 exemption. So maybe in the markup we could clarify that we will not deter the food truck economy at the Capitol.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Seeing no other discussion, I would like to take the vote. All those in favor of the A4 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
No.
The amendment does not go on. Now we're going to the Representative Nash. It looks like you pulled the A5, so we're on the A6 amendment, which is also yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this would delete the let's see, this would delete the ban on plastic bags used in municipalities. And we've had this discussion. The flexibility and utility for people in various municipalities is profound. This will be taking away an option, will create an undue burden on many who either have to, as I said before, maybe go buy the Trader Joe's canvas bag that I hear is all the rage, or find other options. And you know, when there are already food deserts, we really don't want to create an extra undue burden on people financially. So this would delete the ban from the bill.
So, Chair Cleborn.
Thank you. This is just a local control issue that says that municipality, this would ban, this would keep the prohibition for banning plastic bags in place. Sydney Jordan made a great argument for why we should remove that. Members, I ask for you to vote no.
Any other discussion?
And Mr. Chair, there actually is not a prohibition on plastic bags right
There's
now.
There's a prohibition on the ban.
Good clarification.
Thank you.
Seeing no other discussion, we will, all those in favor of the Nash A6, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
The A6 does not prevail. A8, it looks like. Representative Joy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a friendly amendment. This is just take on page 16, it deletes section 16 and inserts capital investment legislative intent. And what this does is that, you know, we're talking about putting a replacement or a refund cost on capital projects or grants. This will actually make sure we take care of roads, bridges, and infrastructure, clean water for everybody. That I know in the tax committee, we've had discussions with Chair Gomez about making sure everybody has resources around Minnesota and, you know, sewer infrastructure, whatever we need. And this is, I think, a good amendment. And I encourage members to vote yes. And Mr. Chair, I would request a roll call.
A roll call has been requested. Chair, to the amendment.
Thank you, Chair Hewitt. I would say that this bill removes the abilities for cities who know their communities best, cities, county, cities and townships and municipalities who know their communities best, to request capital investment and bonding dollars. And I want to make sure that communities can ask for what they need and not limit those choices. So I would ask for a no vote, please.
Any other discussion to the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Joy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, it doesn't, you know, when we put this replacement fund on there, when somebody's trying to build a new water tower or get clean water for their area and they can't come up with that replacement fund before they come to the legislator to use this money, it's going to it's going to restrict communities. There are small communities that cannot afford, if they're coming for us for a $10 million water project, to have $5 million or whatever the requirement's going to be in a fund to come and ask us. So to me, this is a good amendment. Thank you.
Seeing no other discussion, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Cleborn?
No.
Chair Cleborn, no. Vice Chair Hewitt?
No.
Vice Chair Hewitt, no. Lead Nash?
Yes.
Lead Nash, aye. Representative Bonner?
No.
Representative Bonner, no. Representative Berg?
No.
Representative Berg, no. Representative Freiberg, excused. Representative Hansen?
No.
Representative Hansen, no. Representative Harder?
Aye.
Representative Harder, aye. Representative Herr?
No.
Representative Herr, no. Representative Joy?
Yes.
Representative Joy, aye. Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick, aye. Representative Nadeau?
Aye.
Representative Nadeau, aye. Representative Newton, excused. The ayes are 5, nays are 6, with 2 excused.
With the ayes 5, the nays 6, and 2 excused, the amendment does not go on. To the A9, Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A9 would make some changes to Section 3, starting on line 6.10 through 6.27. I just want to clarify, this was one of the components of the bill, Madam Chair, that was never heard in committee as a bill.
Chair Cleborn?
This is money that was appropriated in last year's budget with the understanding that we would have to bring the outcome of that work back to the committee for authorization for disbursement. And it's important that you know how the money is being dispersed. And so we're back at the table.
Lead Nash.
So I'll take that as a yes. We never heard this in committee as a bill. And, you know, I always find be as interesting. And, you know, the Community Vitality Grant Program, we're going to give money to the city of St. Paul. But, you know, other counties have voices, too. And I think it's important that we recognize that other counties have voices, too. So we crafted the amendment to have Hennepin voices and Carver County voices, Sibley County, Scott County, and Clay County voices also heard, because, you know, not in your bill, and the language that's in your provision of the bill was never heard in committee as a bill, so we never had a chance to talk about it. Our voices never got to be added into that, so thank you, Mr. Chair, and we can move to the vote.
Chair Cleburne.
Thank you very much, and while I would appreciate the amendment, I think it would be very selfish of us to only think about our counties. So I would say, members, please vote no on this amendment.
Mr. Chair, if I could wrap up.
No, I'm sorry. He's already called for a vote.
Well, and it did lead.
Well, it is sort of, I guess if we're trying to avoid being selfish, only one city is more selfish than five other counties. So thank you.
Right. With that, I don't believe there's a roll call, so all those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The amendment fails.
Uh-huh.
Representative Kosnick with the A-10.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. The A-10 was a little bit of discussion that we had on a bill that we heard, providing that municipalities or a county that want to engage and help regulate within their own boundaries the sale of cannabis, that they would be permitted to do that through a municipal license if they so choose. They're not required to, and provides that the municipality or the county would more easily be able to obtain a license within the legislation that's being proposed on that topic. So I would like a roll call, please, and encourage members to support their option of their municipalities to have a license if they so choose.
A roll call has been requested. Madam Chair.
Members, I'm just going to ask for a no vote.
Representative Kosnick, we're going to go right to the vote. Mr. Westerman, if you could take the vote.
Chair Cleburne?
No.
Chair Cleburne, no. Vice Chair Hewitt?
No.
Vice Chair Hewitt, no. Lee Nash?
Aye.
Lee Nash, aye. Representative Bonner?
No.
Representative Bonner, no. Representative Berg?
No.
Representative Berg, no. Representative Freiberg, excused. Representative Hansen?
No.
Representative Hansen, no. Representative Harder?
Yes.
Representative Harder, aye. Representative Herr?
No.
Representative Herr, no. Representative Joy?
Yes.
Representative Joy, aye. Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick, aye. Representative Nadeau?
Aye.
Representative Nadeau, aye. Representative Newton, excused. The ayes are 5, nays are 6, with 2 excused.
The ayes 5, the nays are 6, and 2 excused. The amendment does not go on. To the A-12, Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Hewitt and members. I do move the A-12, and I am going to request a roll call on this particular very important amendment.
A roll call has been requested.
So the purpose of this amendment is not to get rid of the current flag or to not have the new flag or the emblem, but it's to give Minnesotans a voice in what happened this last summer. So we had 13 voting members who were allowed to dictate to 5.5 million people to determine what represents our state. And I received so many emails regarding this particular issue, and people were so upset. I mean, I got stopped at the post office, the grocery store, that they wanted to know what was going on at the Capitol. And I think that it's only right, whether you consider this a democracy or a constitutional republic, you can pick whichever one that you choose to go by, but to allow the citizens the right to have a voice on this very important decision. So there have been requests have been made in committee for hearings on some of the bills that have been put forth, and none have been allowed or entertained. And so I'm requesting today that we put this amendment to be accepted and to allow the citizens of Minnesota to have a voice on these two important questions and to have it placed on the ballot. And so the two questions are, if you look, in your packet. And so the first question is shall the state flag design approved by the State Emblem Redesign Commission be adopted? And then the second one has to do with the state seal. Now, I am aware that there are some people that prefer one over the other. And so I think it's important to have these two questions on the ballot to give us a voice. And so I'm requesting, Chair Cleburne, that we please allow this amendment to go forward. Thank you.
Chair Cleburne.
Thank you very much. And Representative Harder, I know that you are bringing this with the best of intent. So I want to thank you for that. But members, I would like to remind you of the months that citizens came and discussed what they wanted and what they needed, and that this is one of the issues that has probably had the most public input as far as a commission at the state capitol for a very, very long time. So I believe that there has been a substantial amount of public input on this. So I would just ask you to vote no against the amendment. Thank you.
Any other discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, the clerk will take the, I'm sorry, the Mr. Westerman will take the, oh, I didn't see you, the Representative Carter.
I have to choose my words wisely here, because this is very disappointing. I mean, very upsetting. I mean, this is very important to our state, the flag, the emblem, and for the people here listening everywhere, that we don't get a chance to have a say on what's going to be flying on buildings and all these emblems. I just think that this is so incredibly unfair that the people of Minnesota do not get to have a choice on this. And so I am encouraging members to please support this amendment. Thank you.
Mr. Westerman, take the roll, please.
Chair Cleburne?
No.
Chair Cleburne, no. Vice Chair Hewitt?
No.
Vice Chair Hewitt, no. Lee Nash?
Yes.
Lee Nash, aye. Representative Bonner?
No.
Representative Bonner, no. Representative Berg?
No.
Representative Berg, no. Representative Freiberg, excused. Representative Hansen?
No.
Representative Hansen, no. Representative Harder?
Yes.
Representative Harder, aye. Representative Herr?
No.
Representative Herr, no. Representative Joy?
Yes.
Representative Joy, aye. Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick, aye. Representative Nadeau?
Yes.
Representative Nadeau, aye. Representative Newton, excused. Representative Freiberg?
No.
Representative Freiberg, no. The ayes are 5, nays are 7, with 1 excused.
The ayes are 5, the nays are 7, with 1 excused. The amendment does not go on. To the A13, Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move the A13, request a roll call.
A roll call has been requested.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we've tried two different ways. We'll go a third way. Rather than spend $500,000 to, I guess, replace the conversation of just, hey, provide healthier options, I am making this more impactful for the people of Minnesota. And we've dealt with this in this committee before, where we make sure that we create opportunities for the healthy eating here at home grants, so that folks who need it can purchase with their benefits that they get fresh produce at farmers markets that are around the state. Wildly successful, in my opinion. I think that was inspired work that we did in this committee in a bipartisan manner in the past, where folks can go weekly and use their EBT cards to buy, you know, maybe early on in the season, you're getting the lettuce that that grows early, and as you progress, you can get different things from the different farmers markets. And not only does that provide healthy food for those people, but it also provides great cash inflow for some of the emerging farmers that we see, and other farmers that come from the outstate. So, you know, I spoke to a couple of emerging farmers that were farming plots of land very close to the metro and some in the metro, and they said that putting money in there was very life-changing for them, and it is also life-changing for the health of the people who are shopping there. So I figured, rather than subsidize things here at the Capitol, We should put our money where our mouth is and say that we're going to benefit the entire state of Minnesota. And with that, I will renew my request for the roll call and appreciate your support.
Chair Cleburne.
Thank you very much. And the healthy eating here at home is something that I know many of us on this committee do support. And that's why last year our side of the table voted, we voted to support this program in the state budget. And so at this time, members, feel confident that we have funded this program in a very, very good way and have made this opportunity available for many more Minnesotans. And I would ask for a no vote on the A13.
Seeing no other discussion, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Cleburne?
No.
Chair Cleburne, no. Vice Chair Hewitt?
No.
Vice Chair Hewitt, no. Lee Nash?
Aye.
Lee Nash, aye. Representative Bonner?
No.
Representative Bonner, no. Representative Berg?
No.
Representative Berg, no. Representative Freiberg?
No.
Representative Freiberg, no. Representative Hansen?
No.
Representative Hansen, no. Representative Harder?
Aye.
Representative Harder, aye. Representative Herr?
No.
Representative Herr, no. Representative Joy?
Aye.
Representative Joy, aye. Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick, aye. Representative Nadeau?
Aye.
Representative Nadeau, aye. Representative Newton, excuse. The ayes are 5, nays are 7, with 1 excused.
But the ayes 5, the nays 7, and 1 excused, the amendment does not prevail. To the A14, Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Cleburne, we discussed this briefly. I just want to make the committee aware of a situation that came to me like a couple hours before the Commerce Committee bill was being heard on the floor. But unfortunately, the City of Lakeville invested quite heavily in its park referendum and a park pavilion and a restaurant, outdoor seating. It's on Lake Marion. Encourage everybody to go there. Come spend money in Lakeville. You'll enjoy it. There is a concession area that will have great food. The contract was awarded to Lakeville Brewing Company. Unfortunately, they did a little oversight on the requirements for a liquor license. I think they might be able to work it out, but as a backup, I'm offering this just for the committee to be aware. It's similar to the Painted Turtle at Lake Nokomis, so it's just a temporary exemption, or maybe not even temporary. It's an exemption to the operations for a liquor license within the city of Lakeville on Lake Marion. And so I'll withdraw it, but I just wanted to share with you so that you had it in front of you as committee members, and we'll continue to work on it. If it's not in the Commerce Bill, perhaps it's something that we could do during the conference report. But just for transparency, I wanted to offer it for people to be aware of. Pretty innocuous, but it would, unfortunately, I'm asked to carry this for the City of Lakeville, but it's important. Seems kind of non-serious, but it is important for the investment that they have and your enjoyment in Lakeville.
Hearing that the A14 is now withdrawn, we're going to move to the A16. Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. So what the A16 does, I move the A16, what it does is simply delete Section 16 of the bill. This is the section of the bill that requires local units of government to create a sinking fund that provides the replacement of an asset that's funded through a project that the state provides dollars for. We heard testimony on both sides of this issue. I understand why Representative Lee is bringing this, and I agree in part that, you know, we need to hone down some of these things. I was hoping that this section would have been worked on and amended significantly to bring some relief to local gov, because I think this is an egregious position to take and force local units of government to replace an asset that may be, and in most cases, it hopefully will be, one of regional significance. I think it also impacts counties' abilities, because they are the vector in which nonprofits receive capital funding, and counties will not be able to, nor should they, tax their residents to replace an asset that does not belong to that county. And so I was going to try to work through this thing and try to figure it out, and I decided that I would my motion is to literally strip it from this bill, and hopefully we can come back at a different time and hone in on this and really try to achieve what the, you know, what we should be doing that's fair for local government. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair.
Members, at this time I'm going to ask for a no vote, but I would like to make a commitment to Representative Nadeau to continue this conversation. And as we all know, that as bills move, there are conference committees, there are still places for work to be done. So thank you.
Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would like to request a roll call on this.
A roll call has been requested. Mr. Westerman, if you could take the roll, please.
Chair Cleavorn?
No.
Chair Cleavorn, no. Vice Chair Hewitt?
No.
Vice Chair Hewitt, no. Lead Nash?
Aye.
Lead Nash, aye. Representative Bonner?
No.
Representative Bonner, no. Representative Berg?
No.
Representative Berg, no. Representative Freiberg?
No.
Representative Freiberg, no. Representative Hansen?
No.
Representative Hansen, no. Representative Harder?
Yes.
Representative Harder, aye. Representative Herr?
No.
Representative Herr, no. Representative Joy?
Yes.
Representative Joy, aye. Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick, aye. Representative Nadeau? Representative Nadeau, aye. Representative Newton, excused. The ayes are 5, nays are 7, with 1 excused.
But the ayes 5, the nays 7, 1 excused, the amendment does not prevail. To the A-19, Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Hewitt. And members, this amendment, the A-19, started with the conversation that I had with, it was a Carver County commissioner. And as we have read, there are newspapers that are closing, and this does affect local units of government. So I'm offering this amendment to address the real issue that's happening in greater Minnesota communities across the state with the departure of local newspapers and coverage of local community events. And I'm not offering this amendment as an attack on newspapers, but as a flexibility to local governments to try to alleviate the burden during this time where the local paper's been disbanded, and the statute also requires that they have the posting of the information. So the amendment simply just provides local governments the flexibility to continue posting the relevant materials online to a broader audience, but then require them to research and to do traditional posting after new local papers have been searched out. So I do request a yes on this one. Please, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Harder. Chair?
Thank you. And Representative Harder, I really appreciate your bringing this amendment forward. As I discussed with Lead Nash last night, this amendment came from a discussion that we had on the floor about local newspapers closing. And I reached out to Representative Tabke, who also had a similar discussion on the floor about schools. And what I would like to do is for you, Representative Tabke, and I to come together and to discuss a different amendment and to maybe broaden the scope of this amendment and to figure out how we can improve it. So at this time, I'm going to ask for a no vote, but I would like for us to continue even before this bill would move to the floor to work on this and maybe make a different amendment that would meet your needs as well.
Representative Hansen.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would strongly encourage a bipartisan effort to be comprehensive so that we can be in 2024 and beyond. This is a very important thing that we need to talk about, and I would encourage and applaud the chair for trying to pull folks together.
Lead Nash.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I really want to do a verbal amendment, but I also spoke with nonpartisan staff, and I respect their opinion. More newspapers are going to close, I believe. That seems to be the trend on smaller local newspapers, but yet we still statutorily require that different units of government provide their minutes and other things. So I hope that we can do this quickly and would like to get the chair's agreement that this will be something once it's figured out that she will put into her bill when it hits the floor.
Hearing no more of this.
I was waiting for
an agreement. Okay. Chair Cleburne?
Lead Nash, you know me very well, and I don't agree to anything until I've read the details. So as much as I would love to say yes, the devil's always in the details, and I read them before I vote. Thank you.
Representative Carter, you want to close?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Cleburne, in working together on this, because it really probably is going to be a broader issue, because the newspapers that are still in existence, it's the question is whether or not that they're going to be able to find a new vendor to actually print the paper. So I am appreciative, you know, to reach out, and yes, let's do work on this before we really hit the head on, you know, on this particular issue. So thank you for allowing me to speak again.
All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The amendment does not prevail. Representative Nudeau, I believe you have the A20.
I do move the A20, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Thank you, members. This is a this has to do with the line 6 in the bill that's talking about the community vitalization. Capillary Community Vitalization Account. And this was an interesting thing for me to look at. When I looked at, this is a $5 million appropriation. And it was put out there last year. It was in last session's bill. And now we're actually going to authorize the spending. And I read all the minutes of the task force meeting. And I read the report. And I looked at the businesses, you know, that were in this district. This is a district right around the Capitol that, interestingly enough, has 20% of its population is disabled. Its population is about 6,800 people. 50%, more than 50% live below 200% FPG in this district. 42% of the population of the housing in this district is rental housing. And the task force, and along with the staff, worked to, you know, interviewed people in the community like all cities do, that all, you know, neighborhood groups, revitalization groups do. They went out there and they interviewed and started talking to the community about what it is that they wanted. And that's so important. You know, that's something that this side of the aisle really works hard on, is it's local control. As soon as people start infringing on that, we start getting our hackles raised. And so as I was going through this and trying to figure out, you know, what's the best method, I mean, I learned a lot. This is not my community in the Capitol area. It's different from mine. Mine's a little bit agrarian, and it's a little bit suburban. You know, both have, you know, there's differences. And so I really value the things that community brings and wants to the table. As I read this thing, and I started looking, you know, they identified the things that every community wants. They want good schools. They want, you know, safe, open, healthy, affordable communities. And the barriers that they have in this area is drug use, lack of safety, economic stress, disempowered families, closed businesses. And those are a lot of the same challenges that many older cities are going through. And so as I started looking at this, and what my amendment does, and what I hope it does, is it retains the best from what I think are two or three partners to do the work to provide the reinvestment and revitalization as much as possible, as much as $5 billion can do, which I would submit is not a ton of money. This is a small district. It's a small population. But I think what I've tried to do is I've tried to hone on identifying the best options that can work together to produce the ultimate outcomes. And that is retaining the $200,000 for the city of St. Paul to do what it is that they're good at. And that's community engagement. That's what they do. They do that, and I've taken the rest of the funding, and I've moved that into the St. Paul Port Authority. Years ago, I worked with the Department of Commerce, and I worked with the Port Authority on the Trillium BTU program, on one of the first PACE programs in the United States, which is the Property Assessed Clean Energy program. And the Port Authority has this incredibly uncanny ability to create innovative finance mechanisms that leverage dollars, that build tax capacity, that help the individuals that they're working with, be they creditworthy or not. And so that's what this amendment does. And it also focuses the resources not across all five districts, but across the three most impacted ones that are especially going to be impacted with the Rice Street redesign and rebuild, along with the transit stop that is also included in there. So my motion is very simple. It takes the dollars, it takes the finance component, and puts it to the Port Authority. I did talk to the city, and I talked to the Port Authority. They were neither supportive nor not, and I'm not saying that anybody is outside of myself is supporting this amendment. But I think that this puts the strongest people in the right places to bring the best results in the most accountable and transparent manner. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Cleaborn.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair and Representative Nadeau, I always appreciate your preparedness for committee and for discussion and your generous heart. I want to say that. The decisions that have been made for the St. Paul Economic and Development Department to vet and administer the grants for this account really have to do with the choice of the community. The community came together and said, we know them, we trust them, we want to work with them. And as I discussed with you in our private conversations, I acknowledge and respect the professionalism of that organization to make good choices and to help the community make the best choices. So I'm going to ask members at this time to vote no for the A20 and just to honor the local voices that came forward on the task force to put this together. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative.
Representative Nadeau, are you going to follow up?
Yes, please. Sorry, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Cleaborn. And I know at the end of the day, regardless of where this goes, hopefully, really, really, really good things are going to come from this. And just to be clear, I am not pulling that away from the city. I'm adding a partner. That was my intent. So thank you.
All those in favor of the Nadeau amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The amendment does not prevail. Representative Koznick, are you pulling yours?
Representative Hart, which?
Representative Harder is going to take it?
Oh, 24, I'll do it.
Oh, 24. So it's the A24. It's the last amendment.
Representative Harder will do it.
Representative, is she reluctantly? I don't know. Representative Harder, A24.
Thank you, Chair Hewitt. The A24. Which I believe you've had conversations with this particular member. So the A24 has to do, so there's a constituent who is an accountant, and she had received a letter, which was dated March 14th, informing her that the Board of Accountancy was auditing her program of learning compliance. This is essentially her continuing education credits, and she had 2 weeks to provide all the documents. Well, as you can imagine, being an accountant, it's consuming, and this is the busiest time of the year to gather this information for this department. So the amendment just simply prohibits the Board of Accountancy from auditing these continuing education credits or program learning requirements 60 days prior to April 15th tax line. It's just simply unnecessary. It's a burden placed on these professionals who, like I said, it's the busiest time of year for them, but the department would have the other 10 months to get those requirements done. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, and I would like to say that I appreciate your bringing this forward, Representative Harder, and I would ask for a yes vote. Thank you.
You would like a yes vote?
A yes vote.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm excited.
Not all Republican amendments are bad.
Okay, anyways, I'm going to stop right there. So, all those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. Representative Harder, your amendment is on the bill.
Thank you.
So, Chair, we will adopt the D4 as amended to House File 3431.
Mr. Chair, I believe you may have skipped the A24.
That was just on.
I
get it.
Okay.
Thank you. We're good.
We all make mistakes, Representative Nash. So, anyways, all those in, do we have to take a roll? Okay, we have to vote on the D. Okay, so as amended, House File 3431. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Wait.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, the DE4. So I got to go back. Sorry, my bad. We're going to vote on the DE. Representative Nash, did you have a statement for me?
Well, I was just trying to save you from getting out over your skis because I believe you have to allow for some discussion to the bill as amended before you decide to move the bill on out of committee.
Yes. Any discussion to the bill?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Representative Nash, Chair Hewitt is not over skis.
Oh.
And I would ask that we not and not make comments like that. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're going to amend it, then we're going to discuss it. That's what I was just told. So, the DE4, we're amending the DE4 to House File 3431. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
The ayes have it. The bill is amended to the author.
Thank you. You know, this has been our committee's work this year. There are a lot of good bills in here. I appreciate the robust conversations that we've had, and I would ask members to please vote yes for House File 3431 as amended by the DE4 and to move it to Ways and Means.
Lead Nash.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess I am a little troubled that there are components of this that never came to the committee as a bill. And we discussed that last night that you had told me that there were things that were dropped in that were never heard. Mm-hmm. And I think that's it's not uncommon here at the Capitol, and even when it's done by my own party, I find that just sloppy. That if we're going to put things into a bill, then have it first come so that the public can testify, we can do more research. It was, and again, both sides have done it, and it's garbage. So I'm just going to go on the record as saying that I don't appreciate that. I don't think that we need to do some of the things that are in here. And I will promise you, in the interest of time, because I'm trying to have a generous heart like Representative Nadeau, we will have a very full-throated conversation on the floor. I would urge members to vote no and would ask for a roll call.
A roll call has been requested on the bill. Seeing up, Representative Nadeau.
Thank you. And thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is you worked hard at putting a good bill together. I'm looking forward to some continued work. I didn't know that we weren't going to be able to talk a lot about the bill as a whole. I have some, you know, questions and concerns with local units of government having to replace assets. That's a big concern, and that's going to be the reason that I can't vote no today. And I'm hoping that going forward, when this gets to the floor, that I will be able to hit a green vote. I'm also a little bit concerned with the Anoka County jail language that was put into the bill. It was one of those things that was brought forward by a member. There was zero testimony from the county on that bill, and I'm still concerned about moving a jail and justice center away from you know, away from where the county, where the judges are. I think that's a, I think we need to be careful. County seat, that's what I was thinking. Sorry, county seat. I'm very concerned about setting that as a precedence. Just because political, because people have political fights, they shouldn't be able to come to the legislature. So I have a few concerns about that. But those are the two primary reasons why I'm going to vote no today. But I just wanted to say this is all in all, it's a good bill. So thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Cleburne, to close your bill.
Yes, and I would just like to address the last comments about the Anoka Jail. You know, with all of the work that we do in our committee, this particular provision was brought forward as a bill. It was posted on time. The community had an opportunity to come in and testify, and, you know, it's not for us to decide if they should or shouldn't, or what testimony does or does not mean, the absence of testimony does or does not mean. So the Anoka Jail in particular is in a historic district, and the community is trying to preserve the historic nature of that district. So I would say to you that, to the comments earlier about local control, it's up for them to decide. And so this is something that would allow them an opportunity if that's what they choose to do. So thank you. And with that, members, I would ask for your yes vote on the bill.
Thank you, Chair Cleburne. And Mr. Westerman, would you take the roll, please?
I just want to restate my motion, if you would, please. So House File 3431, as amended by the DE4, to be re-referred to Ways and Means. Thank you.
Yeah, please take the roll.
Chair Cleburne?
Aye.
Chair Cleburne, aye. Vice Chair Hewitt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hewitt, aye. Lead Nash?
Nope.
Lead Nash, no. Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Bonner, aye. Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Berg, aye. Representative Freiberg?
Yes.
Representative Freiberg, aye. Representative Hansen?
Yes.
Representative Hansen, aye. Representative Harder?
No.
Representative Harder, no. Representative Herr?
Aye.
Representative Herr, aye. Representative Joy?
No.
Representative Joy, no. Representative Kosnick?
No.
Representative Kosnick, no. Representative Nadeau?
No.
Representative Nadeau, no. Representative Newton, excused. The ayes are 7, nays are 5, with 1 excused.
The ayes are 7, the nays are 5, 1 excused. The bill has passed and on its way to Ways. Nonpartisan staff is directed to make any technical corrections as needed, and you're on your way to Means, Chair.
Madam Chair, as we're waiting for our next bill author to come down, could I have 1 second?
Yes.
I think it would be remiss of us to point out or to skip the fact that today is Representative Joy's birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Growing wiser by the day.
Thank you. And I'm always excited to celebrate a birthday. So happy birthday to you. Next. Chair Herr, you're before us with House File 5040. If you would like to move your bill, please.
Chair Cleburne, yes, I'd like to move the bill.
Thank you. And this is, would you like to discuss the H24-0304?
Yes, Madam Chair, and I do have amendments. I don't know if we could just maybe adopt the amendments first and then do the DE.
Okay, is that, let me pull up the file. If you would please proceed.
Yes, the amendment is actually just technical changes so that in order for us to have dates that, and let me just make sure I have the amendment is the A24, and it is just a technical change, and it's really ensuring that the dates that we had originally, it might miss a couple of people, and so we wanted to make sure that we do not have that issue. So if I could just ask the members to adopt that amendment, that'd be
okay.
Appreciated.
Members, is there any discussion to the A24? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of the adoption of the A24-0304, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails and the bill is amended. Representative Herr, I have two testifiers on the list. Would you like to bring those testifiers forward, or would you like to just walk through the bill first?
Let's just do a quick walkthrough, Madam Chair, if you're okay with that.
Okay.
And there, We'll do a quick walkthrough, and then we'll have the testifier speak. And I want to, and I'll try to go through actually this kind of briefly because I know that there's some time challenges here. This actually is the majority of this bill is a policy bill. There was an appropriation of $31 million, and I can walk through sort of how that was allocated. But I just want to point out to this committee that this is a bipartisan bill. It includes provisions from both GOP and DFL. We have provisions in here from Representative Nadeau, Representative O'Driscoll, Senator Rasmussen, and many of the other members. And so there is a lot of bipartisan support for this bill. I wanted to talk about first in Article 1. Article 1 is actually a combination of a number of bills put together, but this includes the article applies to Teachers Retirement Association and St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund, and it accelerates, Section 1 accelerates by 1 year the effective date changes made to lowering the normal retirement age last year. What we used was some of the funds to buy that down so that we could actually move that effective date up 1 year to July 1st of 2024. Section 2 lowers the employee contribution rate for St. Paul teachers by 0.25% for fiscal years ending June 30th, 2025 and June 30th, 2026. Section 3 to 6 contains legislation recommendation for the IRAP to TRA work group that works during the interim in 2023. And this is a bill that finds a solution to requests received by legislators nearly every session regarding individual bill fixes. And so this is just to address that situation. Section 7 and 8 extends by 3 years to a 2022 session law that temporarily suspended the earnings limitation for retirees for TRA and St. Paul teachers who return to teaching service. And if we go into Article 2, that impacts our Volunteer Firefighter Relief Association. This is the work that Auditor Blaha and her particular group work on in the interim with the firefighters that are volunteer firefighters, and they have a number of recommendations they bring forward each year that is collaborative. There and is generally non-controversial. It is just changes and updates to their plan. Article 3 is a statewide volunteer firefighter plan. We added a defined contribution plan to that piece of it. Article 4 is in the applies to our PARA or Public Employee Retirement Association. This includes provisions from Representative O'Driscoll, O'Driscoll, Nelson, Stevenson, Berg, and this. Article 4 makes changes to the plans administered by PARA. This is these sections are just much more technical in changes, but I do want to highlight that there was a provision here from Representative Stevenson that includes increasing the employee-employer contribution for the PARA correctional plan. If we go to Section 5, that's Minnesota State Retirement System, MSRS, and this includes provisions from Berg, Frederick, Tabke, and Tabke, and these are if Article 5 makes changes applicable to plans administered by the Minnesota State Retirement System. I don't know if, and Chair, there's a lot of like sections in it. I don't know if you'd like for me to go through individual sections, but these are highlights from each little piece of it.
You know, I think this is fine. We've all had the brief and the summary to read, and it is available for the public. I just want to walk us back a little bit because I erred in how I made the motion. So I want to make sure that we have the motion correct on the record. So I would like to move the A24-304 to the A24-300. And I want to take a vote on that. So we're amending the DE, correct? I want to make sure I have it correct.
Madam Chair, yes.
All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Now I would like to move the eight. Oh, all those opposed, I always forget about you, Lead Nash. Any opposition to adopting?
I just feel sad.
The A24-304.
You can go on.
Thank you.
Just remember the minority. You might wind up there one day.
So. Oh. Well, that's a different conversation for another day. Okay, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Now I will move the A24-300 as amended to be before us.
Right. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm just going to finish off by talking about just the last few other articles. Article 6 applies to the Minnesota Secured Choice Retirement Program. And Article 7 is our supplemental plans. Article 8 applies to all plans as regarding amortization, internal revenue compliance, and then, just a couple more sections. Article 9 is our state aid clarification. It revises the expiration date for state aid paid to retirement plans. Article 10 changes to the executive director qualification and compensation. It amends the statute that governs how the Board of Trustees of PARA, TRA, and sets the salary for their respective executive directors. Article 11 is St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund Association technical changes. It amends Chapter 354A to remove language that was relevant when there was other first class cities and school districts that had a pension plan, in addition to St. Paul Teachers. Article 12 is just miscellaneous changes. And then Article 13 is one-time appropriations and fund transfers. This is where how we allocated the $31 million that was appropriated to the pension fund, in which and so that I know that's in the brief and that information has been provided to everyone. So if there's questions, I can take those. Otherwise, we can have the testifiers go, and then I can answer any questions regarding the bill.
Okay. Why don't we go ahead and get the bill and the order? So if we would vote to adopt the A24-300 as amend House File 5040 with the A24-300 as amended. Any discussion for that? Or just get the bill in the order? So let's just get the bill in the order and then we'll go to testimony. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion prevails and House File 5040 is amended with the A24-300 as amended. Now with the bill completely together and before us, would you like to bring your testifiers forward or speak to the bill in any other way? Okay. So let's move to testifiers. We have Caitlin Schneider. Oh, I'm sorry. And Valerie Dosslin, if you'd like to come forward as well. Thank you. When you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Dosslin, and I represent the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, which represents school superintendents and other administrators throughout the state. Improving teacher pension benefits and addressing the inequity in the benefits between our Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers is a priority for MASA. We appreciate the work Representative Herr and others on the Pension Commission have done to start to address this inequity and the inclusion of the provisions in the bill. I'm here to express our support for those provisions, specifically the proposal to move the effective date to lower the normal retirement age at which a Tier 2 member can retire with an unreduced pension benefit. Understanding the budget limitations, we believe this is a start to addressing the current disparity. Additionally, we understand the discussion the Pension Commission had regarding the date change for which TRA should reach full funding. We have questions about the impact of this change, and we look forward to having further discussions on that topic in the future. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And when you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Caitlin Schneider, and I represent Education Minnesota, a union of over 84,000 educators. We would like to thank Chair Herr, leadership, and the governor for putting $28 million into TRA pension improvements. This is a tight budget year, as you know, and I know so many union and progressive allies who wish their priorities had gotten this one. We appreciate making sure the improvements to pension benefits passed last year happened faster. For many of our members, this is their first foray into politics, and seeing this move is so powerful for them to see their populism in action. However, I need to alert the committee to a troubling inclusion in this bill. Language on the DE at lines 102.9 to 102.10 changes the full funding date for TRA by 5 years. This was voted down twice by the LCPR, but revisited and adopted a third time. Pensions are complicated, and for the sake of time, the most important thing to know is that this puts TRA into a deficiency of 0.53. This bill shortens the mortgage on the fund without increasing payments into TRA. Minnesota will not meet this deadline under current assumptions. We cannot assume this will be fixed next year. We do not know what the budget forecast will be, and we can't assume pensions will have the same focus as they have had under Chair Herr's leadership. As you know, sometimes you enter session thinking you know what the issue of the year is, and then a pandemic hits, or catalytic converters become currency, or bad weather requires a snow day fix for our schools. I understand how reluctant you may feel to edit the work of the LCPR, but I would argue this is not a reversal, but an affirmation of their first two votes on this change. As this moves forward, please consider removing lines 102.9 and 102.10 of the DE. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, both of you. We appreciate it. I see no, I have no one else signed up to testify. Is there anyone from the public who wishes to testify on this bill? All right, we'll take it back to member discussion on the bill. Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Herr. This, I love sitting on, it's interesting, there's three people on this committee that are on the pensions, just three, right? On the Pensions Commission. I learned a ton. I've learned a lot from the chair. I've learned a lot about how to get along and, you know, make your arguments as best as you can and but then work together. This is a good bill. There's some concerns that I have always had with the bill. I worked really hard to, you know, try to do something a little bit better for the teachers, and I was not successful this year. And hopefully next year, if I'm back, we'll be able to, you know, continue that work. I just wanted to point out to this body that there is one thing in here that is kind of important, and I just want to point it out. It's changing the para corrections, and it is. There is a unfunded mandate that's being pushed on this bill onto county government to move detention deputies into a different plan. And it's taken me a long time to get my head around this issue. It's going to cost Hennepin County $600,000 a year from now until whenever. I think it's a move in the right direction. I recommend that we pass this bill. The targets that the chair had were not as high as I had hoped. I think that we need to take a stronger position and fund those public employees that spend their lives working in the public, and I just think we need to do we need to focus on them a little bit more, and that was not the case. In I mean, we did have some big targets last year, and we did the best we could, but it's not a one and a done, and I'm looking forward to continue working on it. But I do recommend a yes vote on this bill today, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Seeing none, would you like to close your bill?
Thank you, Chair Claiborne, and I will just like to thank, especially, you know, our commission, who worked extremely hard in this bill, and especially having Representative Berg and Representative Nadeau in both the pension and in this particular committee together. You know, everyone took this work very seriously, and I wanted to thank them and our members, but our staff, who's all here today, who have really poured their heart into this work, because this is, you know, I think that pensions is really special in a way in that, like, everything that we do is tied to another human being directly, and we see those people, and we see their work, and we see the impact. And so I just wanted to say thank you to all of them. I want to just take a moment to just address two really quick things that came up. One is first that the amortization that was brought up by our testifiers, that I just want to be very clear that what was done was actually it was this Rasmussen amendment, and Senator Rasmussen and I worked very closely together. And the truth is that what we did in changing that amortization is aligned with actuarial practices. It is supported by MMB. It is supported by actuaries. It is standard best practices in that we don't re-amortize an entire plan when there is a benefit change in that. It does bring the plan into a slight deficiency, but that is a contribution deficiency that is not adding to the unfunded liability within the plan itself. And that, you know, I did actually in my bill put together that there will be a work group to look at amortization in the interim, because all of our plans should be doing amortization on the same schedule and consistently across plans. That is really important. And that just like when we reduced the assumed rate of return last year, these are assumptions that go into how a plan, looking at a plan's health. And just because we change numbers to make a plan look healthier doesn't mean that plan is healthier. And so, yes, it did pass twice in our committee, but for me, and I think Chair Clemo, you know this too, somebody, consistency and principles matter. And that, though I would have, you know, loved to keep it the same so that it looks like there's no contribution deficiency, there is one. And so in order to show that accurately, you have to actually accept the amortization the way that we did in this particular bill. And I will just say to our educators that we don't look at one factor when we make plan changes. When we decide we're going to look at benefits, we don't just say, well, you have a contribution deficiency, we're not going to make any benefit changes to the plan. We look at many, many factors. And for those who are worried that we're just going to look at this and say in the future put money towards closing this deficiency, if that were the case, we would have never invested in our plans the way we did these last 2 years, because otherwise I would have just put all the money into unfunded liabilities, and that's not what we did. So I ask that the commission has the members have any questions about amortization, please have a conversation with me regarding this. And I will also just say that, you know, I appreciate Representative Doe. He did work really hard and brought up some great questions about the corrections plan. What we did in the county corrections plan was just align that with the state correction plan members, as well as everyone doing the same job should have the same benefit. And we try to always, where we can, when the cost is doable, we do try to do that. And so with that, members, I really would appreciate your support of this. This is a really good bill, and we've done some really great things. I just want to lift up one more thing. I'm sorry, Madam Chair, is that oftentimes we have individual members coming to a legislator asking them to fix something that went wrong with their particular plan. And in the past, unless you knew a legislator or you knew how to navigate the process, you were able to maybe potentially get your particular account fixed. What we did in this bill is said is empower all plans that when we make a mistake at the state or within the plans, which we rarely do, and we have great staff here, but when that happens, we have the power to change that and do that directly with the member, not having to have them go through a legislator to have that changed. And so I think that some of the alignments that we have here, whether it's IRAP to TRA, whether it is this language that says plans can make these changes themselves, I think that we're making good structural and systemic changes to address futures and problems in the future. So I do ask for the committee support.
Thank you, Chair. I know this has been something that you have done so much work on and reached out to so many people who are impacted by this. And I just want to acknowledge the fact that you and I have had conversations and that you and I agree that people don't get a do-over. They get one working life, and we need to make sure that we honor the promises that we make. So with that, members, I would move House File 5040 as amended to be re-referred to Ways and Means. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion prevails, and House File 5040, as amended, is re-referred to Ways and Means. Members, we are going to recess since we haven't gotten to our third bill yet. We will reconvene in room 200 at 10:45. And with that, we are in recess. Good morning. I bring back into session state and local government, and we have Finance and Policy Committee for Thursday, April 18th, 2024. With us now, we have Chair Stevenson with House File 5274, and I will move House File 5274 be re-referred to the General Register. Chair Stevenson, would you like to introduce your bill?
Madam Chair, can we do the A7 amendment?
Certainly. Mm-hmm. Would you like to describe the A7 and what it does?
Madam Chair, the A7 amendment brings the bill in line with where we are in the other body, so it narrows the scope of the bill just to historic horse racing and the regulatory extent of the Racing Commission.
I will move that the A1 be before. Oh, sorry, the A7 be before us. Members, is there any discussion to the A7? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption of the A7, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails and the A7 is adopted to House File 5274 as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. So after adoption of the A7, House File 5274 focuses only on historical horse racing, or HHR. As members might be aware from the news media, the Racing Commission a couple weeks ago held what was billed as an informational hearing on proposals from the state's two tracks to have 500 historic horse racing machines at each track location. At that informational hearing, the commission then voted to allow those 500 machines at both tracks. Incidentally, they did so without complying with their statutory obligations for consultation, and despite being warned by their staff that they were not in compliance with those statutory obligations. This bill clarifies existing law to make clear what I think is already a fact, which is that historic horse racing machines or slot machines at the tracks are not permissible under state law. Just so that folks know what historic horse racing machines are, these are video console machines, excuse me, that you walk up to. A player places a wager on a horse without knowing what race they are betting on. The machine randomly selects a real horse race that occurred sometime in the past, and if the horse you bet on happens to be the horse that won the race that is selected by the machine, you are paid out a sum of money. Members, as I mentioned, this was an informational hearing at the Racing Commission. About a month, 6 weeks before that informational hearing, the Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division of the Minnesota Department of Public Safety issued a technical review letter in which they concluded that these devices were gambling devices that are prohibited under Minnesota Statute 609.75. They further concluded that historic horse racing, quote, presents itself as a multi-reel, multi-line video slot machine. They further concluded that it wasn't pari-mutuel in nature. For those reasons, Madam Chair, we're bringing this bill to make clear that historic horse racing machines are not permissible at the tracks, and I would ask for a yes vote and am open to discussion and questions.
Thank you very much. We do have five testifiers on the list. Would you like to begin with the testifiers? Sure. If we could please ask Andy Plato to come forward, and Mr. Plato will be followed by Randy Sampson. When you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Andy Plato, and I serve as the Executive Director of the Minnesota Indian Gaming Association, or MIGA. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on House File 5274. MIGA leaders appreciate the legislature's recognition that historic horse racing is not contemplated anywhere in current law, and an appointed body like the Minnesota Racing Commission does not have the authority to expand gambling in Minnesota. Gambling policy is the business of this body and the full legislative branch, and all 201 members should be alarmed that your role as lawmakers has been hijacked. Racing commissioners were provided the AGE letter in your packets long before their vote on HHR. Commissioners knew that state regulators affirm these games as illegal gambling devices, just like slot machines, not as pari-mutuel horse racing, and thus in no way under the Racing Commission's authority. Then, Executive Director Gustafson reminded members that any action on the track's request before tribal consultation would violate Minnesota Statute 1065, and the commission acted in defiance of that counsel. In other words, after decades of debate at the Capitol on this very topic, the commission decided to deliberately circumvent legislative authority and unilaterally authorize slot machines at the state's horse tracks. Tribes have an inherent sovereign right to operate and offer gaming affirmed by the U.S. Supreme Court. Commercial racetracks do not. Gaming revenues serve as the essential source of money that funds tribal governments, tribal communities, and the services indigenous Minnesotans rely on. Today, a significant amount of those revenues come from video slot machines, devices that are virtually identical from a player's perspective to the HHR machines proposed by racetracks and legally approved by the Racing Commission earlier this month. House File 5274 is a reasonable, appropriate, and necessary response to prevent further unauthorized and illegal actions on this topic. And its passage rightfully protects the legislature's authority as Minnesota's sole lawmaking body. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Plato. Next, we have Randy Sampson, who will be followed by Justin Rivek. Mr. Sampson, when you're ready, if you'll begin your state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Randy Sampson. I'm the chairman and CEO of Canterbury Park, which is a publicly held company and one of the two licensed racetracks in Minnesota. I'm here today to speak in opposition to this bill as it takes us backward at a time when we need to find ways to boost purses and rebuild the horse racing industry in Minnesota. Pari-mutuel wagering on horse racing was approved by Minnesota voters by constitutional amendment in 1982, and in fact, horse racing and the state lottery are the only forms of gaming in Minnesota to receive statewide voter approval. Canterbury Downs opened in 1985 but closed in 1992 after two owners were unable to remain financially viable as competition grew from the lottery and newly authorized tribal casinos. Although many at that time said horse racing was a dying business and couldn't compete with the casinos, my father and I, along with Dale Shenyon, purchased the track and reopened it in 1994, working closely with horse owners and breeders, our communities, state regulators, and legislators to achieve the goal of reviving and sustaining the Minnesota horse racing industry. The purses we pay help support a $400 million horse industry in this state, as well as provide jobs to thousands of Minnesotans. Canterbury alone has over 1,000 employees and over $25 million in payroll and benefits. These hospitality workers, farmers, breeders, and people that care for the horses are the ones that will be most impacted by this bill and the mobile sports betting bill if they are to pass. Also impacted will be the hundreds of thousands of people who every year attend and enjoy Canterbury Park for horse racing, card games, and events. Nationally, horse racing is at a crossroads. States that have implemented strategies to enhance purses are seeing their racing thrive, while states that have not supported racing are seeing tracks close. Racetracks need to keep adapting if we are to maintain employment, purse levels, and the investments that will sustain a vibrant horse industry. The cardroom legislation in 1999 and our 10-year marketing agreement with the SMSC are good examples of previous successes of working together to find ways to enhance purses. We believe that Minnesotans want horse racing to thrive, but that won't happen without a thoughtful, long-term plan about how gaming should evolve in Minnesota. Our opposition to this bill and our concern about the sports betting bill is that they are preventing Canterbury Park from doing what tracks in other states have been able to do, expand our offerings to meet changing consumer demand and fund competitive purses. The current House version of the mobile sports betting excludes the tracks from sports betting licenses and provides only a $625,000 stipend to the horse industry to offset the millions of dollars of lost revenue and purses that the industry will see if mobile sports betting bill passes. The bill before the committee today prohibits a modernized form of pari-mutuel wagering, HHR, which would prevent us from following a successful model that has worked to increase purses in other states. And this bill is moving forward without any informational hearings or ability to understand how it would help the horse industry and why the HHR terminals are not slot machines. Well, I appreciate the author's amendment on the A7. We still believe that the amended language includes what we think are unintended restrictions on our current business, and we would appreciate the having some input into additional amendments should this bill continue to move forward. Canterbury Park's message for two sessions has been very simple. If we are going to make changes to Minnesota's gaming landscape, let's do it in a way that works for tribal casinos, tracks, and local charities. Let's not pick winners and losers. Each of these Minnesota gaming industries provides different types of economic and community development with positive impacts throughout the state. Each has been trusted operators of gaming for decades. Also, as technology and consumer preferences evolve, each of these groups is subject to the same competitive pressures and the need to adapt. We believe the broadest economic and community benefit will come from bringing all these parties together and setting a clear direction for new gaming in Minnesota. Unfortunately, that isn't where we are at this point in the session. Instead, the bills are picking who will win and who will lose, expanding gaming for some but prohibiting for others. If you pass this bill and the current version of the sports betting bill, you are jeopardizing the future of thoroughbred horse racing in Minnesota. Let's find a way to work together on a gaming bill that will benefit all stakeholders in the Minnesota gaming industry. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony. Next, we have Justin Revick, who will be followed by Jack Meeks. When you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Justin Revack, and I represent I'm the president of the Minnesota Horsemen's Benevolent and Protective Association. I'm here today because the people I represent, the hundreds of horsemen and horsewomen who call Canterbury Park home, need your help. We're not asking for a handout. We're just asking for a chance to compete, a chance to survive. Horse racing is a highly regulated industry, so you play a big role in our success or failure. Just look at states like New York, Kentucky, Iowa, Nebraska, Arkansas, Louisiana, and many others. The one thing all these states have in common is lawmakers have given the tracks the opportunity to compete, and the result is a vibrant and flourishing horse racing industry. The state of Minnesota has made policy decisions not to allow us to compete with other states around the country, and it's killing our industry. We've asked to participate in sports betting, and we've been told no. We've asked the state to make up the difference from these policy decisions with some of the tax money from sports betting, and we've been told no or offered insignificant amounts. We've asked to be allowed to use HHR terminals, and this bill aims to close the door on that. The question I ask is why? Why doesn't the state of Minnesota want racing to thrive? Horse racing touches every part of our state. The University of Minnesota Crookston students deliver 6 to 12 thoroughbreds foals each year. The University of Minnesota's vet program receives grants from the industry to study horses and support students. Tens of thousands of Minnesotans enjoy going to the races every summer. We provide so much more than other industries through our benevolence programs that hundreds of racetrack workers, first responders, and police officers benefit from. Programs that the state has shown it believes in and are important by providing funding for them. If horse racing doesn't survive, neither will they. We're not a gambling industry. We're an agricultural industry supported by gaming. This bill takes away another opportunity for us to survive on our own. Please vote no on this bill and give our horsemen and horsewomen a chance. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate hearing from you. Next, we will have Richard Bremer. Oh, excuse me.
Jack Meeks.
I'm sorry, I meant Jack Meeks. I jumped the line. Thank you. Apologies. When you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is Jack Meeks, and I'm chairman of Citizens Against Gambling Expansion. We're a statewide Minnesota nonprofit organized over 20 years ago to stop the expansion of gambling in Minnesota. Recently, we became aware of a potential massive expansion of gambling when the Minnesota Racing Commission began consideration of adding 1,000 slot machines to the state's two horse race tracks. Those slot machines would feature historic horse racing games. The machines are purposely designed to mimic typical slot machines. A player's experience is essentially identical to that provided by slot machines. The machines under consideration look like slot machines, act like slot machines, and in any reasonable evaluation are slot machines. If the two racetracks are allowed to place 1,000 slot machines at Running Aces and Canterbury, it will represent one of the largest expansions of gambling in Minnesota history. The Minnesota legislature has the sole authority to regulate gambling in this state and must carefully and appropriately use this oversight authority. The unlawful action that happened 2 weeks ago at the Minnesota Racing Commission cannot be allowed to stand, lest other organizations or appointed boards attempt to do the same, to install slot machines anywhere in the state of Minnesota without approval from the legislature. National and international studies have shown slot machines to be the most addictive form of gambling. We do not believe that the appointed Minnesota Racing Commission or any other appointed body has the authority to expand gambling in any form. We believe that you, members of the Minnesota legislature, determine the gambling policy in this state. This bill is a much needed response to prevent what happened at the Minnesota Racing Commission and serves as a warning to other unauthorized boards or commissions from taking similar action in the future. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your being with us today. Now we will move on to Richard Bremer. When you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin.
Yes, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Richard Bramer. I'm vice president of the Minnesota Thoroughbred Association. I'm also a fourth-generation farmer from Lake City, Minnesota. And my family has farmed for 50 years there, and for the last 30 years, we've participated in breeding and owning thoroughbred racehorses. Now, this industry is in crisis in Minnesota. And to illustrate the crisis it's in, there were, in 10 years ago, where there's about 275 foals born in Minnesota. This year, that number is going to drop to about 60. Unfortunately, my family now represents 10% of the foals that are going to be born in Minnesota. I say unfortunately because the rest of the industry, the rest of the breeders and owners are rapidly leaving the state of Minnesota. In fact, we personally have started to make this move because we foaled three of our mares in Iowa this year just because of the situation is more attractive in other states. Other states are supporting the thoroughbred industry. At this point, Minnesota is not. Now, the Minnesota Racing Commission recognized the crisis that this industry is in, and they researched this proposal for HHR rather thoroughly, and they concluded that this was legal and this was the last best hope to save this industry in Minnesota. Now, they did put an amendment in to postpone the enabling of HHR until the legislative session ended, with the hope that the legislature is going to come up with some serious solutions to the crisis in this industry and to alleviate some of the disagreement with the Indian tribes. And that's why they did that. And they researched it. This is not just an opinion or an impression that HHR machines are slot machines. They concluded it was not. It was definitely a pure mutual system. And I would ask that this committee vote down this bill because the question of legality of HHR needs to be properly adjudicated in a court of law that thoroughly gives the opportunity to both sides to represent their take on this issue. So I think that this bill puts a nail in the coffin of the last best hope for racing in Minnesota. So I would ask you to not take this action. Do not vote down this bill. There's serious problems going on in the racing industry. Let's look at something that will help the industry and stop other states from stealing our industry, stealing our jobs, stealing our taxes. We have to step up and compete with other states in this industry. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate your being with us. Is there anyone else from the public who wishes to testify on this bill? Please come forward, Mr. Neumeister. When you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Rich Neumeister. As being around here for a long time, I see sometimes how legislation is burped out in many ways. This is not good legislation as it came out. I do have some strong opinions because I know of the process and all that, and I'm not here to get into those. But I do think this is a bad bill. I think it's one that I got to choose my words carefully. I don't think there was a lot of decisive research on this particular bill. I think there were some situations that happened and it suddenly appeared. And we all are aware, Madam Chair, as long time like for myself, where that happens. Mm-hmm. And so with that in mind, I would encourage policymakers to deny this bill. Because I think horse racing is an important industry. And unless you do something, like the gentleman said, I would encourage a no vote on this bill.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anyone else from the public wish to testify on the bill?
Pardon? I'm talking here.
Oh, sorry. Got it. Okay. Thank you. Chair Stevenson.
I guess, actually, thank you, Madam Chair. Happy to hear from committee members. The one thing that I would say, Mr. Sampson mentioned that they would like input in any future amendments to make sure that there's no unintended consequences. And of course, I'm more than happy to do that. we want to be focused, as I mentioned, on HHR and the regulatory scope of the Racing Commission and nothing else. So if either of the tracks believes that there's unintended consequences from this language, I'm very open to having those discussions and narrow the bill. I would just note we had an amendment in Commerce that addressed some of issues that were raised by Canterbury that were thought to be unintended consequences, and I agreed with them, and so we revised the bill in Commerce, and happy to do that again.
Thank you very much. Members, any questions? Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Stevenson, I appreciate that you made the amendment to be more narrow to your intent. As we heard the testimony, Madam Chair and committee members, there is a large economic impact as a result of this bill prohibiting, and we'll discuss later, the merits of historic horse racing. But the impact of the bill will work to really hamper a $500 million industry in the state of Minnesota. And it doesn't just affect the owners, it affects those that work there, summer employment, the people that, the horsemen and women that take care of the horses, the jockeys, the people in the back stables. We have migrant workers that come in from other states and such. So it affects a lot of people. And it has a huge economic impact. Madam Chair, I'm going to move that this bill, as was mentioned, the process was really bad. It's moving really quickly. I want to move this to the Economic Development Committee to have a better discussion on the impact of the economic development to the areas that the tracks are in and to the state of Minnesota. And I would request the roll call, please.
That is a non-debatable motion. So we will take a vote on that. Mr. Westerman, if you'd please call the roll.
Chair Cleavone?
No.
Chair Cleavone, no. Vice Chair Hewitt?
No.
Vice Chair Hewitt, no. Lee Nash?
Aye.
Lee Nash, aye. Representative Bonner?
No.
Representative Bonner, no. Representative Berg?
No.
Representative Berg, no. Representative Freiberg?
No.
Representative Freiberg, no. Representative Hansen?
No.
Representative Hansen, no. Representative Harder?
Aye.
Representative Harder, aye. Representative Herr?
No.
Representative Herr, no. Representative Joy?
Aye.
Representative Joy, aye. Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick, aye. Representative Nadeau, excused. Representative Newton, excused. The ayes are 4, nays are 7, with 2 excused.
With 4 ayes, 7 nays, and 2 excused, the motion does not prevail. Any further discussion? Lead Nash or Chair or Representative Kosnick? I'm giving you all kinds of titles today.
That's okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, I hope we do have, you know, we're not going to bog down the whole committee time, but I think I would like to have some thorough discussion on it for the committee and those affected. Very serious. It's unfortunate that the committee didn't recognize that this has a huge economic impact on the tracks. I know it's easy to get tangled into the whole sports betting decision and that, but as was stated, that, you know, this bill came as a response to something that a decision that was by the Race Commission, but it's going to have impact on a lot of people. And so I would point out a couple things. One, on 20.3 or 240.03 in the statute, it lists the commission powers and the duties. And item number one is that the Horse Racing Commission is within their power and duty in statute to regulate horse racing in Minnesota. Item number 6 is to supervise the conduct of pari-mutuel betting on horse racing. And so it's my opinion that the decision that the Horse Racing Commission did was fully within their powers and duties that the legislature gave them. And so this reactionary bill to, because you didn't like the decision that they made, is bad form and bad legislation. In subdivision 14, 2240.01, it defines pari-mutuel betting And it's part of this bill, but we're changing the rules of paramutual bedding and changing the definition because you didn't like something that's already currently in legislation. And so I think when you look at what horse racing is defined as in Subdivision 8 and Subdivision 14, what paramutual bedding is, you can recognize that the decision that was made for historical horse racing fits the powers, the decision was within the powers of the Horse Racing Commission, but it's also the definitions in statute, if you look at them, recognize that historical horse racing is permitted in the state of Minnesota. If you have a deck of cards and Representative Joy and I are playing slapjack, and you have the same deck of cards and Representative Nash and I are playing blackjack, it might look like similar games, but they're very different. And that is what's happening here. People are trying to say that the historical horse racing is slot machines. They may look somewhat similar, but the way the games, if you do a little bit of the research, and I would trust the research that the Horse Commission did, spent hours on it. We're only spending, 15 minutes in the Commerce Committee and, maybe a similar time here or so. Take their studied opinion and research. It is a very different game than slot machines. So I think it's not accurate to call it slot machines. They're very different games. They're you're playing within the paramutual rules against each other bettors. You're not playing against the house like you do in a slot machine, in typical slots. And so I think this bill, I understand sort of the intent to that you didn't like the ruling of the Horse Commission, but it's bad legislation to abuse our powers to influence perhaps another bill that you're trying to work on. A very complicated issues that you're taking on, and I respect that, Chair Stevenson, but this is not the way to try to influence other bills that you're working on, or because you didn't, you might disagree with the Horse Racing
Commission. Excuse me, no motives or intent. Just speak to the language of the bill, please.
Yes, Madam Chair. But I just think it was in testimony that this bill is in response to a decision that was made by the Race Commission. And so I think we should really slow down, have a broader discussion on this maybe as a task force, which I don't normally love task force in the legislature. But we're moving it very quickly. If you look at the timeline of the bill, it just is poor legislative work, and I have a problem with that. I'm still open on sports betting in general in Minnesota, but I think it's important for all of us to protect the economy in Minnesota. That's part of our charge and the jobs of our constituents. And so I really oppose this bill on those grounds. And as I said, let's trust Representative Stevenson, why are we having this bill while the question of the bill is in the courts? And why not just let the courts play out and decide if the gaming or the Racing Commission overstepped their duties? As I said, I think it's clear in statute that it's within their duties to regulate horse racing and supervise the conduct of paramutual betting on horse racing in 240.03.
Chair Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Kosnick, number one, I believe that it is the legislature's role to decide what gambling is permissible in Minnesota, not the courts and not the Racing Commission, and that's why the bill is coming before us. I disagree with you very strongly about what the definitions in the in statute regarding horse racing and paramutual allow. I don't know that there's an argument that historic horse racing machines are really a form of horse racing. There's an argument that it's a form of paramutual that people have advanced, but I would note to you that, again, the nonpartisan staff at Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement concluded directly that it's not paramutual in nature. And they also concluded that they are, I'll quote the letter directly, it presents itself as multi-reel, multi-line video slot machine. That's what the experts in gambling regulation in Minnesota, the nonpartisan career civil servants who do this day in and day out, concluded. The Racing Commission made a decision to ignore that and to ignore other statutes that prohibited their action and approve additional gambling. That's the legislature's job, not a commission's job, not the court's job.
Chair Stevenson, if you could just clarify for anybody who might be watching, and because the letter is not in the packets, could you please tell the members of the committee and the public what is the date on the letter from Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement?
This is a letter, Madam Chair. This is a letter that is dated March 1st, 2024. Oh. It was issued by Carla Sincotta, who is the director of Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division of the Minnesota Department of Public Safety, and it was addressed to Director Gustafson, the executive director of the Minnesota Racing Commission.
Thank you. I understand it is in some packets. It's not in my packet, so forgive me. Thank you. And could you please remind us on the date that the commission made its decision, please?
They made their decision, I believe it would have been April the 1st or 2nd. April 1st.
So there's a month in between the time the gambling enforcement and the commission made its decision.
That's correct, Madam Chair. And I would note again, I think it's overlooked and should not be, that the meeting where the Racing Commission approved this was scheduled as an informational hearing, not a hearing where they were going to make a decision. There's been a lot of talk today about process here at the legislature, where we have had two public hearings where we advertised that we would be voting this in the House, on this in the House, taken public testimony, done everything according to the order, gone through all the proper channels, same in the Senate. In the Racing Commission, they spontaneously moved from an informational hearing to a decision meeting.
And then I just have one other clarifying question for the public. So let's just say the machines are allowed to be, the slot machines are allowed to be installed. If there were a problem, who would be called to investigate any incident there as far as the gambling is concerned?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it's my understanding that the operations of the tracks are supervised by the Racing Commission, though certainly alcohol gambling enforcement might have a role when they are of the opinion that that these machines violate a statute that they are tasked with enforcing.
So thank you very much for that. Representative Kosnick, did you have a follow-up?
I have a couple. Representative Joy, I think, had a comment too, but just with the letter from Alcohol and Gambling, you know, they weren't looking at what was proposed in Minnesota. What their letter references, historical horse racing in other states, I think Kentucky and Virginia. And so I appreciate their input, and this is why I'm saying we should have a little broader discussion or let the courts play out, not us be make the law and execute it, which is kind of what you're trying to do, or what I think the bill does is we're creating a whole new section of law that calls this out and makes historical horse racing, you know, if we did it in a more not under such circumstances, and just as the legislature decided maybe we need to clarify this because we saw it happen in other states or something, this is in reaction to something that's in the courts, which I think, again, I would tread carefully to legislate, but the 1994 constitutional amendment gave the power to the legislature, or the people spoke and said we should institute horse racing in Minnesota and enabled these, was the start of enabling these statutes that the legislature already put together, and now we're changing the rules of the race. I don't think that's fair.
Thank you, Representative Joy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Stevenson, you said one thing, and I just need a couple questions clarified, and I'll make it quick. You say the legislator decides for gambling, casino gambling. Is that your question? So where do we decide that that should take place?
Chair Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Joy, what I said was it's the legislature's job to decide what gambling is permitted in the state of Minnesota. If we're going to expand gambling in Minnesota, that is our job. If you are asking about, are you asking about the gambling that occurs at the tracks, or are you asking about other gambling?
Just,
I mean, it's all in statute, I think, is the answer to your question, except for the constitutional amendments authorizing the lottery and authorizing.
Where are slot machines ran
today? Excuse me, Representative Joy. Sorry. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Where are slot machines ran today?
Chair Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Joy, thank you for the clarification. So the answer to your question is there are slot machines at tribal casinos around the state. Tribal gaming is comes from the sovereignty of Minnesota's tribal governments. They have the ability to make decisions about what happens on the land that they are sovereign over, just as we have decisions to make about the land that this legislature is responsible for. It's further regulated by federal law, the Indian Gaming Act. IGRA is a word, a letter in there. It must be regulation, regulatory act, yeah.
Okay, well.
Representative Joy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just my question was, and I was just trying to clear up, because you know we say Indian casinos have the slot machines, but they are also in my area outside of the casinos at bars owned by people, friends of mine, that have penny slots that you can bet $8.80, and they're electronic reel with bonus games. So just thought I would put that on record. Thank you.
Chair Stevenson.
I don't have a comment on that.
All right. Lead Nash, do you have a comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question for Mr. Sampson, if he could come back down.
Mr. Sampson, please.
And as he's walking down, I'll start so we can move things along in an expeditious manner, Madam Chair.
We have time.
Okay, great. Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Sampson, because nothing ever happens in a silo here, many times things happen in parallel and one bill will get passed and then another will come along and it'll have an additive effect. If Chair Stevenson's bill for sports betting becomes law, what is the effect of this bill on your organization?
Mr. Sampson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Nash, that is our concern. I mean, we as has been expressed, we already are in a situation where our purses are not competitive with other states. So we're trying to find ways to increase purses and improve the industry. And we are very concerned that the current version of the sports betting bill will have a negative impact, that level of you know, the mobile gaming, the amount of wagering that'll take place, and the fact that those customers that prefer sports betting or that enjoy sports betting are very similar to people who play cards and play horses. So it will become a significant competitive issue for us and put us at a disadvantage because, again, they've got mobile wagering and you have to come to the racetrack to participate in our gaming. So we're very concerned, and this HHR effort with the Racing Commission was part of an effort on our part to look for ways to enhance our horse racing industry, and particularly if the sports betting bill passes, you know, we not only are not going forward, we're going backwards with sports betting. So I'm not sure if that completely answered your question, but yes, we do believe that it will have an impact of, you know, we've done various analysis, looked at other states, and it will negatively impact our revenues and our purses by somewhere between 10%, 20%. It'll be a significant decline, and we are still hopeful that as part of a sports betting bill, if there is one to pass, that there's an opportunity to find a way to accommodate the racetracks and the racing industry in a manner that's more meaningful than what is currently in the legislation.
Representative Joy, or Lee Nash, sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if I heard you, Mr. Sampson, earlier, you said that the effective differential will be, you'll be getting a $625,000 stipend in the bill that we just talked about, not this one. You'll be losing potentially millions. One of my questions is, because the county where you operate is directly adjacent to my own in Carver County, and I know that you often have a fair amount of charity work that you do or benevolent work that you give to organizations. Can you tell me, using large rough numbers, since you may not know that off the top of your head, what that is and how that will negatively impact some of the people who you have given to in the past?
Mr. Sampson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative. Yes, there is Canterbury has been from the beginning a very active participant in the community and want to give back to the community. And from the beginning, we have been, I'm not sure if you're familiar with something called the Keystone Club, but it's a group, it's corporations that agree to donate between 2% and 5% of their pre-tax profit to charitable and community efforts. And we have participated in that for the past 30 years. And so we do have an active donation plan. A lot of it goes to the local community. Some goes to horse-related, you know, retired racehorses, injured jockeys, things that are specific to the industry. But a broad array of charitable endeavors. And Mr. Rivak, when he talked, there's a lot on our backside, too. There's a number of programs on the backside for taking care of the people back there. Actually, at the other hearing, we heard from Abijah's, who was talking about the work that they do with retired racehorses and first responders in equine therapy. And so it is something that's very, very close to Canterbury and to our horse industry, and something that will be impacted if Canterbury is unable to have the financial resources to continue to do the community involvement that we have.
Lead Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's also safe to say that for both of the entities that we heard from today, both yourself and Running Aces, that which I believe is in the author's county, that a significant amount of tax revenue will be evaporating from the coffers of the respective counties. I did want to say one thing, and then I'm going to ask for a roll call, Madam Chair. It's been bantied about that the opinion of experts and the opinion of this and the opinion of that, that has zero force and effect of law until the courts have ruled in on that. So we can get advice from, well, nearly anybody down here, some of whom are lawyers and some of whom are not, but an opinion has zero effect until it's actually been run through the courts. And as we have all said, I think Chair Stevenson and I and others have said, you know, in committee, oh, well, that's unconstitutional. And my friend and former colleague from your side, Representative Winkler, rightly pointed out that until it's been adjudicated in court, nothing's unconstitutional. So the conversation is prescient here. So the opinions don't matter. They have no force and effect of law. Courts need to decide what is and what isn't fair and what is and what isn't a proper opinion, because opinions are cheap around here. So I think this has got some really negative impacts here. I am a little surprised that an author from the county in which one of these organizations is operating would be this draconian. But so I think more to come when this comes to the floor, but the additive effect of the sports betting bill on top of this potential bill will cripple people who participate in the horse racing industry. You know, I've got members that raise horses in, or members of my district that raise horses. It's a very tenuous thing for them to do. And this is their livelihood. This is their family's livelihood that is about to be impacted by a bill that was introduced after the Horse Racing Commission held their meeting. I'm troubled. And truth be told, I'm not someone who gambles. I just look at this as, how is this going to negatively impact people that live in my district? How is this going to negatively impact the charity work of these organizations? How is this going to negatively impact a lot of things? And I just think that this is rushed. 4-4 introduction and referral, 4-11 second committee, 4-15 next committee stop, 4-18 here we are today. You know, just from a logistical perspective, all of us have had bills that we have brought to the committees that we will see. All of us understand sometimes how hard it is to get people to come and testify. This is rapid. And so I have asked for a roll call, Madam Chair, and I will be done.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone from Running Aces here today? No one from the public with Running Aces? If you'd come forward, I just have a few questions, and I don't know if you are.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can answer your question.
Well, that's what I was just going to ask. What is
I'm an owner and a breeder.
Okay, then you would not be able to answer my question. So thank you very much for your time. Chair Stevenson, in your committee, I did ask questions of running ACEs, and they are, since they're not here in this committee today, do you recall, and I didn't ask you this in advance, so if you don't have the numbers, if you could maybe ask your researcher to share these numbers with us later. Do you recall the percentage? So the legislation allows a minimum of 14% of the card room proceeds to be used to support the horses. Do you remember the percentage that Running ACEs provides in support of their horse operation?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, so what, just for clarity, I do remember the discussion in the Commerce Committee and your questions of the representatives from Running ACEs and Canterbury Park. The statute that authorizes racetracks to have a card club requires that 14% of the proceed of the contracts at a floor go to supplementing the horse racing. And my recollection is that the representatives from Running ACEs testified that they meet that minimum, and I don't recall that they said that they went any higher than that. I believe their testimony was that they were at the minimum, but if someone else has a different recollection, they can.
That was my recollection as well, that they are just doing the minimum, but yet still asking for expansion of their gaming operation. Is that correct? Is that what you're understanding?
My memory matches your memory.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair?
Excuse me? I'm asking questions in the testifying of the chair.
Yeah, I was going to contribute to your line of questioning, but proceed. But
thank you, Chair Stevenson. I also recall in the conversation, and it's unfortunate that Running ACEs isn't here, but I think this is important information for the committee to also know. I also remember asking of the testifier at that time about their ownership. And it was my understanding and recollection that they told us that they were owned by two LLCs, and I had to push for further clarification of that. And then the testimony was that they're owned by Connecticut hedge funds. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, my memory matches your memory. Yes.
Thank you very much. And I'll just leave it at that, and let's see what Representative Kosnick would like to ask. Representative Kosnick.
Oh, and I didn't mean to interrupt, Madam Chair, but I did watch the Commerce Committee hearing and, mm-hmm. and was curious, and I was just going to offer that. I thought my recollection, at least for Canterbury, and I thought with Running ACEs, is that because of the purse money has dwindled through previous arrangements, that they were supplementing even, contributing at least the minimum, but even going beyond what was required by statute to keep things going, but it's not a solution that can go on indefinitely without some additional revenues to support it.
Thank you. I do believe that Canterbury said that they exceeded the minimum, but I was referring specifically to Running ACEs. Is that correct?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Kosnick, I think Chair Cleaborn's correct that Canterbury Park, and it was Mr. Sampson who offered that testimony. The Commerce Committee said that, at least in the last year, that they had exceeded the minimum. But I don't believe that Running ACEs testified to that extent. I believe Running ACEs' testimony was that they were at the minimum. But again, if someone else has, I'm open to being corrected.
I'm just going to ask you then if you would close up your bill, House file, and I will, you close up whatever final statements you want to make, and then I'll make a motion.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, appreciate the discussion today. You know, this conversation takes me back to Schoolhouse Rock, my memory of that is that it's the job of a legislative branch to make the law, it's the job of the executive branch to apply the law, and it's the job of the courts to interpret the law. It's our job to make the law. It's not the job of the Racing Commission to decide to expand gambling. It's not the job of the courts to decide to expand gambling. That's our job to do that. We should not do that with regard to putting slot machines at the tracks. And so I'd ask for a yes vote on the bill.
All right, thank you. And I will renew my motion that House File 5274, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. A roll call has been requested.
Chair Cleaborn?
Aye.
Chair Cleburne, aye. Vice Chair Hewitt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hewitt, aye. Lead Nash?
No.
Lead Nash, no. Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Bonner, aye. Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Berg, aye. Representative Freiberg?
Yes.
Representative Freiberg, aye. Representative Hansen?
Yes.
Representative Hansen, aye. Representative Harder?
No.
Representative Harder, no. Representative Herr?
Aye.
Representative Herr, aye. Representative Joy?
No.
Representative Joy, no. Representative Kosnick?
No.
Representative Kosnick, no. Representative Nadeau?
No.
Representative Nadeau, no. Representative Newton, excused. The ayes are 7, nays are 5, with 1 excused.
With 7 ayes, 5 nays, and 1 excused, the motion prevails, and House File 5274, as amended, is re-referred to the General Register. That concludes the work of our committee at this time. I want to thank everyone for being here today, and I would especially like to thank Amanda Rudolph, Justin Brill, Matt Gehring, Helen Roberts, Chelsea Griffin, and our page, Michael Thomas, for their hard work. John, I forgot you. John.
And Madam Chair, we might thank in absentia Ryan Wiskerchin, who was our researcher for quite some time.
I wholeheartedly agree with that. So thank you, everyone, for your hard work and for making this committee possible. And thank you to the public for participating.
Thank
with that,
you,
we are adjourned.
Thank you.